with, even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good evening, everybody. Well, we've reached a really famous and wonderful story in the Mumonkan, the Gateless Gate koan collection, Zen story collection, case 41 out of 48. I'm so excited to be in the 40s. Case about Bodhidharma. And as you might recall from long ago, there was another case about Bodhidharma that we'll also remind you about after we hear the main case here. So here's the story. Bodhidharma faced the wall. The second ancestor stood in the snow, cut off his arm, and said, "Your disciple's mind has no peace as yet. I beg you, Master, please put it to rest." Bodhidharma said, "Bring me your mind, and I will put it to rest." The second ancestor said, "I have searched for my mind, but I cannot find it." Bodhidharma replied, "I have completely put it to rest for you." So, setting aside for a moment the creepy imputation that they dropped in there, this is a wonderful, famous story about our hamster wheel of a mind, right? The way our mind drives us crazy. And we want, therefore, to turn it into a thing that we can improve or fix, or maybe somebody else can fix it for us. But we know, you know, we see through our practice and through our life that there's not exactly this thing called a mind that we can fix or pacify or improve. And yet we seem to need to go through a process, right? Through a journey, in order to realize that we can just let go of trying to fix ourselves. And then we realize we actually are, in some fundamental way, okay, just the way we are. And that play seems to often, maybe always, need to involve other people. You know, there are many stories, of course, of meditation adepts going off on their own into the woods forever and stuff like that. But the Zen tradition is so relational, you know, so interactive. And so this story implies multiple stories about interaction between the student and the teacher. And one of which they just referenced by talking about the second ancestor, who is a Chinese monk named Weka, called the second ancestor because in the end, you know, this is like, it's a giveaway that it says the second ancestor. Because in the end, in another famous Bodhidharma story, he's going to name this student as his successor. And so the Chinese love ancestors and succession. So the Zen tradition received that from China. That Bodhidharma is the first ancestor, and this is going to be his successor later. But in the beginning, he is not, right? That's not clear. That's the other thing about these stories, that they seem so tidy, you know. Zen stories, Greek mythology, all, you know, all the stories, they seem so tidy because we know how it works out. But in real life, we don't know how it's going to work out. And it's helpful, I think, to remind ourselves of that, that the character in the story doesn't know he's the second ancestor, even though that's what he is called in the story. He just thinks he's like us, right? A confused person trying to make some change, be a little calmer, being a little less crazy, find a way to navigate his life. And we don't know really any much of anything about this particular person in terms of biography before he studied with Bodhidharma. But we know he heard that there was this Indian meditation master living in a cave. And, you know, like the hippies going to India in the 60s, and like so many other pilgrims over the eras, he wanted to know, you know, who is this? So one of the backstories here is that Bodhidharma is such an intense meditator, like nothing can really disturb him, and he doesn't get up for anything. And Weka finds his cave, and it had some kind of door on it, I guess, and he bangs on the door, and Bodhidharma doesn't move. He tells him to go away. And so Weka has to do something to convince Bodhidharma he's serious. And so that's what the cutting off your arm thing is. And that retained, the flavor of that is retained in our Zen tradition for all these millennia too, right? You know, that it's good to be able to do something to show that you're serious. And so in the Japanese monasteries, they have people wait in a special room by the gate for a few days or a week before they let them in, you know. Although it's usually a foregone conclusion, that's what's going to happen. And we don't exercise that very formally at Red Cedar Zen. We don't make new people sit in front of the gate or sit in the Zoom waiting room or something like that. That's what we should do, probably, yeah. The first time you come, yeah, so Kyler here got an easy evening. He should have just sat in the waiting room with nothing at all, just totally blank, you know, and meditated. That's probably what we should do. And then we all look in the waiting room at the end of the evening, and if he's still there, that's like cutting off the arm, you know. We let him practice with us, let whoever is practice with us. So that's part of the backstory, is that these students worked hard, you know, to show that they were really sincere. The other famous, one of several other famous stories about Bodhidharma is that when he first came to India from China, and here we should mention that we don't really know if he was a real person. He's a myth, you know. There's apparently some archaeological and anthropological evidence that he probably existed, but none of it's very firm or convincing. And so it's a bit of a partisan thing. Did Bodhidharma really exist? Bodhidharma not being a Chinese name. Did you catch that, you know? Indian Dharma name. Bodhidharma, right? The light of Dharma, the awakening of Dharma. So anyway, the other story is that when he first came to China, it happened to be in an era where the ruler of, it was the southern kingdom of Liang. There were many eras in China with different constellations of kingdoms. So only a few times it was all unified like it is now. So he arrived in the southern Chinese kingdom of Liang. And at that time, the emperor was already like into Buddhism. And Buddhism had not been in China that long, and the emperor was creating Buddhist temples. But it was kind of like the idea was there only had been a few monks from India, and, you know, I don't know, maybe those few monks didn't really remember everything. But the idea was that it was sort of like this rough approximation. It was sort of like a rough copy, you know. They didn't have much confidence in what they were doing at the time. This was like the fifth century. Supposedly Bodhidharma arrives there in AD 520. I don't know how they would have such a specific date for someone who don't know if he exists, but they do. And the emperor had been and supporting this flourishing of this new religion, you know, and maybe other temples as well. And he heard there was like a serious monk, so it was like a big deal. There only had been a few of them, you know. And it'd be kind of like us, I think, you know. If a true like giant Japanese Zen teacher showed up, we would get all excited. And in fact, that happened one time. So about 20 years ago, I can't remember the name of either character now, but an American Zen student came to Samish one time. Can't remember his name. And he told us that he had a Japanese teacher and that Japanese teacher was thinking about moving to this area. And would we like to meet him? And I forget who was with me, you know. I don't know if you were there, Bob, or what, but... and so... Of course, I got all excited, like, oh, a real Japanese teacher. Maybe he said he was enlightened or implied it. I don't know. You know, and we were all younger. We were so much younger then, right? And then in the fall, like a few months later, said Japanese teacher came to visit. And we got all excited. And we took him to the Dharma Hall. And he was very kind of gruff and serious, which is kind of the style, you know. And he asked if he could offer incense. He had reasonable English. I remember him offering incense. It was the Dharma Hall in the Masonic Lodge upstairs, the previous one from the current one. I just remember very carefully offering incense and doing these very sort of stiff, intense prostrations. and then coming back up to me and a big deep bow to me and thanking me for letting him offer incense. And then I think this guy, the American, like had some property on Chuckanut Drive that he was hoping to buy or something. Turned out the whole thing was completely a pipe dream and none of it was actually going to happen, but we got swept up in the story, you know, because just like Emperor Wu in this story, we're like, whoa, you know, on some level, like, whoa, the real thing. And then, and this is a little embarrassing, this next part of the story. So I called up Norman a few days later and said, Norman, wow, man, Japanese teacher coming. And this is like one of his more polite things that he ever said to me when I pissed him off, which was very few times. And he's not very piss offable, you know, Norman. He said, well, seems to me the Sangha already has a teacher, being him, you know. I was like, what do you think? This Japanese guy is going to be our teacher. He's like, I think there already is a teacher. Yeah. And I snapped out of it, you know, like you do, right? Oh, yeah, sorry. yeah, how's the weather down there? So anyway, we're so vulnerable to this, right? You know, we want to do it right, and we want to have the right teacher, and if we find the right teacher, we'll do anything, right? You know, we'll drive them around and buy into an exciting fantasy about buying a multi-million dollar property on Chuckanut and having this new teacher, or, you know, cut off our arm or whatever we have to do, you know? So anyway, Emperor Wu back in 520 AD, of course he wants to see the visiting teacher. And so he asked him about the flourishing, about Emperor Wu asked him about his efforts, you know? And he says, so I have endowed temples and authorized ordination. What is my merit? You know, referring to the Buddhist concept of merit, kind of cosmic positive energy that's generated through our activities. And the chanting we just did generates merit. So Bodhidharma very famously said, you know this answer, no merit. And so the emperor, of course, is taken aback, you know, like he studied whatever was available in Buddhism. So he's shocked, you know. I think part of me was worried that exactly that the visiting Japanese teacher way back then was going to say something like that. I don't know if I thought it consciously, but I was worried he was going to look around and say, no merit, you know, what you guys are doing. This is just not the thing. But the emperor bounces back and he asks Bodhidharma, well, what is the first principle of the holy teaching? You know, if there's no merit, then how does it work? You know, what's the principle? And Bodhidharma said, vast emptiness, nothing holy. So there is no holy teaching, right? Vast emptiness, nothing holy. You know, which is either threatening or liberating, right? Depending, you know, on how you see all this, how you see your mind. And then this, the third part of the exchange, three-part story, is the emperor asks him, well, who is sitting before me? Or some translations have, who is confronting me? And Bodhidharma said, I don't know. You know, who are you? I don't know. And then he heads off to his cave and many other legendary things happen, you know? So yeah, how do we understand our mind? You know, how are we seeking validation? You know, do we require someone on the outside? Is there an inside? Is there an outside? These funky stories just bring up so much, you know. Who are we, really? And they also bring up how much we suffer when we have some fixed idea, right? Some fixed idea of who we are, what the practice is, or what's supposed to happen. And these last months under COVID, like, has been pressing against that, right? Pressing against all of our fixed ideas of who we are and what's supposed to be happening. And what the world is like, you know. And if we cling to any of these ideas, you know, we suffer. But I think the thing that's easy to misunderstand is it's not like there's a shortcut either. It seems like we need to practice with our clinging and our suffering and our thinking we know who we are and what our mind is and how do we fix it and how do we get validation and how do we do it right and who is the true teacher. And I am appreciating the part about my story of the visiting Japanese teacher in Norman too, that sense of not noticing the treasures that are right in front of you, you know, and not noticing the treasures are right within you, which is another part of always the spiritual journey. You feel such lack, right? So you go on a great journey, only to discover once you're exhausted and out of energy, you can't look anymore, that you had it all along, you know? You had what you needed all along. And a third, or maybe I'm on four now, I'm not sure, a famous teacher about Bodhidharma is at the end of his career. So this is like the beginning of his career in China. So like we have beginning, middle, and end in this story. It's a tidy story. So, which also gives out, which the scholars who argue that there was no Bodhidharma, that's one of their arguments too. The story is a little too tidy. So the ending of his career before he vanishes again, he has four disciples. So that, and that's also humbling, you know, a lifetime of effort, hardcore, famous first Zen meditation teacher in China, four disciples over his whole time. And so he asks the four disciples, he brings the four disciples together and says, you know, tell me what the true meaning of the teaching is. What have you learned from me, you know, all these years? And whoever answers correctly, you know, will receive my Dharma, will become the next ancestor. And so the four gather around. And interestingly, kind of cool, those four, sorry, I just realized I forgot to bring this up. Of those four, one of them is actually a woman. So that's kind of cool to notice that one of the earliest Zen stories has a nun in it, has a woman in it. So it wasn't all men that were recorded. So Bodhidharma asked the four disciples, can each of you say something to demonstrate your understanding? The first, named Daofu, stepped forward and said, it, the Dharma, the way, is not bound by words and phrases, nor is it separate from words and phrases. This is the function of the way. And Bodhidharma said, you have attained my skin. And then the nun, Dzongchu, stepped up and said, it is like a glorious glimpse of the realm of Akshobha Buddha. Never seen once, it need not be seen again. Bodhidharma, you have attained my flesh. And then another monk said, named Dao Yu, said, the four elements are empty. The five skandhas are without actual existence. Not a single dharma can be grasped. Bodhidharma said, you have attained my bones. Finally, Weka, a character from story 41 here, Weka came forth, bowed deeply in silence, and stood up straight. And Bodhidharma said, you have attained my marrow. You know, so you win the prize. But Dogen comments on this case in his essay on it. He makes the point it's a mistake to think that one of these answers is better than another, and that it's a linear narrative like it at first appears, that all of these expressions are completely an expression of the Dharma. So let me just share the expressions, because oftentimes when you study the story, you kind of skip over the first three, right? Because you're like, okay, what's the real thing, right? Just like Emperor Wu did, just like I did with the visiting Japanese teacher, like, what's the marrow? But these are all deep, you know? Important teachings. So the first one, this practice, this way, is not bound by words and phrases, nor is it separate from words and phrases. This is the function of the way. So we can't completely describe this, what we're trying to understand about our heart, about the mind, about the world, with words and phrases. But it's not separate from words and phrases. We also practice with language. We practice with concepts. So it's beyond concepts, and it's not separate from concepts. That we need both, right? It's kind of the holding both, conceptual and non-conceptual. We need both. This is the function of the way, or the Tao, right? And so the Tao is a sense of flow, conceptual and non-conceptual flowing together. And then the second one, which is our nun, Dzongchu, it's like a glorious glimpse of the realm of Akshobha Buddha. once, seen once, it need not be seen again. So I forgot to look up exactly the symbolism of Akshobha Buddha, but we can say for now that it's a vision of, you know, awakening, of light, of clarity, right? Of everything's okay, you know? And this is not far out religious stuff exactly, even though it's framed that way. We all have these moments, right? Of just like, ah, right? You know, sometimes it seems to be framed in an aesthetic moment, seeing a sunset or a relationship moment, you know, a moment of loving connection. And we think that it's about the sunset or about, you know, the person we love, but actually it's about this glimpse, this glorious glimpse into the realm, you know, the realm of this bigger reality where everything is actually okay. And that you just need to see that once, to penetrate, to really understand, you know, and that those glimpses are important and complete. So that's good too, right? Nothing wrong with that answer. The third answer, the four elements of empty are empty. So, you know, emptiness means everything is not rigid and separate. The word emptiness is confusing in English, although it's the same word that they use in Sanskrit for this concept. But the four elements, you know, being, you know, earth, air, water, earth, air, heat, fire, water, are empty. So they're not like really that separate. They're interpenetrated and connected. And the five skandhas, you know, are an early Buddhist formulation of the mental constructs that we mistake for ourselves. The five skandhas are without actual existence. And not a single dharma can be grasped. So you can't cling on to anything and think, oh, now I got that. Now I have this, right? It's all flowing and fluid and interpenetrated. So that's a wonderful answer too. And then the hero of the story from our frame as heroic thinkers, Weka, just bowed, just stood. So that's also very beautiful, right? We talk too much, you know? And that's another thing that's kind of beautiful in a way about the COVID time, right? We're all being a little quieter, you know, some ways. We're on a lot of Zoom calls, some of us, but the basic mode of reality, right? The basic mode of society is more upright, more silent, right? So that's a blessing too. It's the marrow. So some stories about Bodhidharma to inspire us to just keep, you know, on the journey, you know, keep exploring, keep wondering, being committed, noticing when we get caught by this deep desire to be validated by something or someone, or this deep delusion that we are somehow just our ideas about who we are, just our thoughts, just our thinking, you know, just our personality, just our, you know, our self. And go look, you know, and if you try to find that self, there's nothing to find. And Dogen's later teaching is a beautiful echo of that, isn't it, in Genjo Koan, that to practice the way is to study the way is to study the self, and to study the self is to forget the self. So case 41 is a forgetting the self teaching, you know, bring me your mind and I will heal it for you. I will pacify it for you. I've searched and searched and searched for a mind. You know, who am I? The more I think about it, the more I don't know, right? Just like Bodhidharma's answer to Emperor Wu. Who are you? I don't know. And so there's lots of kinds of I don't know, right? So this is a certain kind of I don't know. And I don't know that's, you know, deep in our gut, you know, and I don't know that's a result of practice over years, you know, not just like, oh, fuck it, I don't know, but like, I don't know. And the changing of the times has that quality too, right? You know, we keep thinking we know what's going to happen, each of us in different ways, and we're reading media, or some of us are actually doing deeper background reading. Maybe some of us here actually downloaded scientific papers. That would be wonderful, you know, trying to figure out what's going to happen with the virus. And, you know, and that's useful, right? So this way is like the first student said, you know, not separate from words and phrases. So it's not separate from science. It's not separate from predictions. It's not separate from information. We need all that. But it's not bound by that, right? It's not knowable. Nobody knows, you know? No, literally nobody knows what's going to happen. We have predictions based on the past and based on science, right? About vaccines and immunity and antibodies and so on and so forth. But we really don't know. And in the meantime, we don't know what's going to happen to human systems after they go through whatever it is they're going to go through or keep going through. We don't know. Our cities and towns and culture may look very different in a couple of years. Really might, you know. We don't know. And, you know, we also have a lot of faith that in addition to running around and trying to figure it out, it's a great blessing for us and for the world to sit and watch, sit and face the wall, to have part of our life be devoted not to running around and figuring it all out, but to be devoted to stopping. They say that Bodhidharma faced the wall. So we have this tradition of a 7-day retreat, you know, that's the official length of Seishin. So they say Bodhidharma faced the wall for 7 years without moving once, you know. We don't worry about digestion or stuff like that in these stories. And just to make sure we do thorough Bodhidharma, other famous myths about him were that he started nodding off, like a few years in, maybe he started nodding off, you know. So he ripped his eyelids off and threw them on the ground. And when they landed on the ground, the first tea plants sprouted. So from then on, Zen students have drank strong green tea. Although we're New World Zen students, so we drink coffee. Which reminds me of, a couple of years ago, I got to do sort of more intense koan-based, you know, sort of pure, if that's the right word, Zen training at a temple in Honolulu. I've mentioned this before. And the information that you receive when you sign up, one of the rules, it tells you about all the rules. They tell you all the rules ahead, which is smart. You know, we should do that. One of the rules they say is no coffee, and they get up at 4 a.m. So I was concerned. But it turned out in the Zendo, you know, it's kind of a reference to the story, you know, it all goes back to these old stories. They ran around and gave us these big, not the little dinky teacups, but a good sized teacup of very strong green tea at 4:15 a.m. And then they slurp it down really fast. Like I was a little embarrassingly slow at first. I had to figure out how to do it, you know. And then they jump up and jog around the outside of the Zendo a few times on the deck. And then they do 15 minutes of stretching, and then they sit. So it all worked out. I was never too sleepy. So anyway, do you need coffee? I don't know. So here's a little about Bodhidharma in case 41. Bodhidharma pacifies the mind. I hope you're finding these stories helpful. Oh, one last thing about Bodhidharma, actually. Bodhidharma's a famous 4-line teaching is attributed to Bodhidharma. And here, since we're translating from Chinese, we don't get the full effect. But in Chinese, each line is the same number of characters. So it's kind of like this sort of powerful little brick of text, you know. Most Chinese poems and Chinese verses, it's the same number of characters, one after the next. So this was probably written later. But these are the so-called 4 principles of Bodhidharma, which are also the 4 principles of Zen. And they are, Zen is a special transmission outside the sutras with no dependence on words or phrases, directly pointing to the human mind, seeing into one's nature and attaining Buddhahood. A special transmission outside the sutras, no dependence on words or phrases, directly pointing to the human mind, seeing into one's nature, attaining Buddhahood. So that's our MO, you know, just direct. We are the A train of Buddhism. But it's also kind of not completely true, because that was not written by Bodhidharma. That's very clear from scholarly work. It was written a couple hundred years later, maybe 300 years later. He never said that. And it was written by Tang Dynasty monks who all were highly educated in the Chinese system and wrote tons and tons and tons of books, you know, so about how there's no words and letters. But that's great too, right? You know, it's both, right? It's both. And it's just exactly the same there as Bodhidharma's first first student in his exit interview with them, that it both depends on words and phrases and does not depend on words and phrases and is not separate from words and phrases. So other changes, one change for a little while is for my own sanity, several years ago, maybe 8 or 9, we all agreed that I could take a month off once a year. And sometimes I've made it look like that's not really true because I don't really obey, you know, so because I'm still around and stuff. So next week, I'll be off for the month of July. Six of our wonderful practice leaders, several of whom are here right now, are going to take the helm. So each Wednesday there'll be a talk and the hosting of the Zendo by each of them. Kate and John and Edie and Chris and Scott and Bob. Did I say all the right names? And the neat thing is that we're going to, so July actually has 5 Wednesdays in it, so we'll spill this into the first Wednesday of August. And the 6 of them are going to talk about a really important teaching in Mahayana Buddhism, which is the 6 perfections, which is like the sort of training manual for bodhisattvas, which we probably don't talk about near enough, so that's really good. And the group of them and I have been starting to study a few books on those, and I'm sure they'll mention those books, and we can all get the books and study them. One of them is Norman Fisher's most recent Dharma book, which I happen to have here. It's called The World Could Be Otherwise, written with kind of strange type design. And the other one is a more scholarly book, just called The 6 Perfections. Can you read that? Kind of. By someone named Dale Wright, who's a scholar in Los Angeles. And then they'll also take turns hosting all the other regular Zendo practices. The regulars in each of those groups can help them out because they may be a little less familiar with some of the things, you know. Can't do everything. So we'll continue to have Monday through Thursday, 7 a.m. Zazen. Really recommend that if it at all fits your day. It's a nice way to start the day. Monday through Thursday at 7, one period of Zazen, and then just a very short 5-minute bit of service. And this Wednesday night practice at 7, and Friday practice at noon, and Saturday practice at 7 a.m. again, but that's a little longer. We do 2 periods of meditation with walking meditation. And then on the first Thursday, Chris will host the Zen Alive Sunday morning program, which we hope eventually will be every Sunday. So that's one change. I'll be away for a month, and these were the other folks will be the unmuted one. And it's probably about time. I feel fine about how this all went. We had to move quickly online in March, and I already had some Zoom background, and I seem to be able to bang bells and hit drums and chant and not drop too many beats. But now time for more of us to practice that. One limitation of Zoom, as you probably know, is you can only have one person speaking or chanting at a time, so we can't really have an orchestra like we like to have in person, unless we broadcast from somewhere where they're all in the same room, and we're not quite ready for that, but we may be ready for that before too long. And the other change is, of course, here we are online and likely to stay online. If you haven't been in any of these discussions yet, you'll see some stuff and some invitations in the email soon, trying to figure out a little more about our future. Like now we're kind of settling in. This is like, you know, 3 months in, like we're settling in. Like, how do we do this, you know? And so one thing is we still, of course, have a physical building in Bellingham, downtown Bellingham on Forest, that's sitting there empty. So we're trying to figure out what to do about that. So there'll be some information about that soon. We may end up making some changes there. And we also are recognizing that we our initial offering has been just kind of maintain, you know, keep practicing. And that's wonderful. But we need to offer a more diverse offering with some introductory classes and gatherings and chances to ask questions and ways to meet each other. You know, there are those of us who haven't been at this together forever. So if you're a little newer and wondering how do you really kind of connect with everyone, we're going to provide some more opportunities in the fall for that and try to sort of take a little step back and say, well, how would you design a Zen program on Zoom, you know? And maybe it requires some other elements than just sort of carrying what we did in person onto the screen. So maybe a few other offerings. Hopefully all pretty simple and accessible and not too time consuming, but just to make the pod a little richer. And the other thing I just want to share, in case you haven't heard this from me yet, one of the things I'll be doing in my July away, in addition to getting some solo time in the wilderness, which I'm super excited about, is taking more steps and maybe completing the initial formal process with my wife, Janet, of 29 years, to separate and divorce. So I'm working on that. And if you know Janet and want to chat with me about that, we can definitely do that sometime. Can tell you a little more about how that came to be. Big change, difficult, but I think the right change that needs to happen there. So having a month off gives me some more space to focus on that and to really be available to her and to the whole process. We're doing a collaborative divorce, which is a legal construct that's actually quite wise and positive. So I don't like to act too excited about divorces, but should you ever need a divorce, just file that away. There's a nice positive legal process if you can cooperate together, called collaborative. So anybody have anything they want to add or ask about Bodhidharma or upcoming Red Cedar Zen reality, or questions for me before I blip away? It's cool. All I have to do is click a button and you'll never see me again. So handy. Hey, go ahead, Bob.
I remember years ago, and it was when we were back on Unity Street.
Oh.
Many years ago.
First
time. We had some kind of a... show and tell evening. We were doing skits, and Jay Christensen, who was a first Eno for Red Cedar, actually, still a good friend, and you did a skit on this koan, where Jay cut off his arm. you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I forget how he did it. Did he make like a paper mache arm or something?
Yeah, there was like a fake arm. Yeah, he threw on the floor, you know. He's supposed to be standing out in the snow and freezing and everything.
Thanks for bringing that
back. I don't know if you remembered that, but I couldn't not think of it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, we need, I guess we can have skit night on Zoom. We'll have to do that.
Yeah.
Been a while since we had a skit night. Yeah, what else? Anybody? Memories, questions, thoughts? Go ahead, Judith.
So I was wondering what actually happened to that guy's arm. And is the second ancestor the one-armed man? Or did it magically get did Bodhidharma fix it for him, or...
No, I think he just had one arm. Yeah, I think he just had one arm.
Some wonderful plant grow where, not tea, but something else. I mean, what happened to his arm?
I'm not aware of any, right? Yeah, any description of what happens to his arm. It's funny, they make a big deal about eyelids and tea, but an entire arm seems to just get dropped into the mists of history. Yeah, I don't know. And they also don't talk about like tourniquets or, keeping him from bleeding out. If somebody's able to cut his arm off and immediately have a conversation,
Right. And how do you do full prostrations with one arm? Or hold your tea or whatever.
Yeah, we do everything with two hands. So I guess he just had to be one.
Maybe he was the guy who came up with that one hand clapping thing.
Oh, yeah, maybe so. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we're in a play mood tonight. It's awesome.
Well, I'll tell our story. I got to throw a bucket full of water at Tim in one of our productions.
Yeah, we did have skits more recent years. Yeah. What story was that?
That was Layman Pang.
Layman Pang story. Yeah.
So you maybe I had to miss that, but it was it was kind of exciting throwing some water on it.
Now, are we like able to remember the actual story? Like, what was the water part?
I don't remember.
You just remember the bucket. You don't remember the story or the teaching.
I don't remember.
Yeah, and Jeff was in it too. Was Jeff?
No, see, Jeff was supposed to be my partner, and I was supposed to throw water on him, but he was sick that night. So okay. You were the stand-in.
I was the stand-in. I was Layman Pong's understudy.
Yes, you were.
Yeah, you bucked the water with me, and I've never forgiven you. I don't know why you're even still here.
So wasn't it something about Layman Pong thought it was too hard, and his wife thought it was easy or something?
Oh yeah, easy, hard, difficult. Yes.
But that wasn't this one. That's a different Layman Pong.
That's a different one. That's a famous, wonderful story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Layman. Yeah, that's right. Layman Pong. This is a good story. Layman Pong, who's another Chinese character. Yeah, he's studying the Dharma, and he's like, difficult. And yeah, his wife is no. Easy. And their daughter has the last word. Mm-hmm. Neither difficult nor easy. Oh, forgot the punchline. Don't you hate it when people tell jokes and they can't remember the punchline? Oh well, somebody can look that up. But it's a beautiful story. Just look up difficult, easy, Layman Pong, you'll find it.
Yeah, and especially because the woman got the last word.
Yeah, and several of those, the woman get the last word. Yeah, those are wonderful stories. And it's significant in those stories that the main character is not ordained, is not a regular person. And he has a son and a daughter and a wife, and they're all very wise and loving too. They're loving stories. So there's one set of a collection of like 30 Layman Pong stories. And there's a not too old translation that's pretty good by someone named Seton. Get that. So many things we should study and talk about. Oh my gosh. I guess I can't take a month off after all. Never mind. Okay, well, shall we call it a night? Thanks for being here. These are so nourishing, I think, I hope, for all of us. They are for me. Gather in this funny way as a community, whether we're in Bellingham or Arizona or inside or outside. Are you guys bowing to the house? What are you bowing to?
Aren't we going to do the end of the Dharma Talk chant? Or did I miss it?
Yeah, we'll do the end of the Dharma Talk chant and then the refuges. May our intention equally extend to every being and place. With the true merit of Buddha's way, beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Oops, delusions first, right? No, beings, yeah, sorry. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. So let's stand and bow. And then the refuge chant in Pali. And if you don't have all this stuff, it's downloadable and printoutable and stuff on the website. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam kacchami. Sangham saranam kacchami. Tutiyampi buddham saranam kacchami. Tutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tutiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. Thank you all in every way, and see you in August, and let's our paths cross somewhere else.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Night.
Take care.